will conduct themselves in a professional manner, and it is expected that all other participants will conduct themselves in a professional manner. Combativeness, rudeness, verbal aggression won't be tolerated, and if such behavior occurs, board chair reserves the right to limit who may address the board. The board strives to conduct its meetings with the utmost respect for the process and for those in attendance. So at this time, does anyone have any conflicts of interest that they need to declare on any agenda item matter today? Okay, hearing none, we will move on. We will bypass the minutes at this time, which is under subsection 4. We will then move on to sub 5, which is our investigation file under subheading A, and this is in regards to complaint 20-27-C, Dr. Mark Olson. We did hear, start with this complaint several meetings ago. The complainant was present and gave a summary and answered questions. Dr. Polkoff first also gave her investigative review. The doctor was not present, so we could not ask him questions, and there was a material that we wished to attain so we could have the most information to better adjudicate the case. So we'll ask Dr. Polakoff at this time if she would summarize the case from what she described at that first meeting where this case was heard, and then to give her report on the additional information that we received. So, and if anyone has additional questions, we'll ask those of Dr. Polakoff, and then hear from the complainant. I believe most of us probably have some additional questions, and then we will hear from the doctor. So Dr. Polakoff, your report, please.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell and board. This is Dr. Polakoff on case 20-27C. Mark Olson, and the patient is B.M. The patient made a complaint against Dr. Olson for concerns of a post-surgical wound that the patient reports he requested surgical intervention for to repair the adverse effects of the surgery for more than 2 months after the surgery occurred. The patient was hospitalized, and another surgeon did an intervention to save his leg, according to the patient. The patient, and in review of the case presented during the last board meeting, as stated by Dr. Campbell, and several allegations have occurred due to the review of the doctor's records, review of the patient's history, and review of the hospital findings. The first is abandonment of patient. The patient never received a letter or information that he was canceled from care. He stated that he was notified by the office that his future appointments were canceled. He states that his leg was turning black and the flesh wound was still open. The patient also had an allegation of practicing surgery with concerns of his post-operative care and the timing of his post-operative care. The patient had his sutures removed 13 days post-operative from an ankle surgery. The patient's medical records indicate that a steroid was being taken, but no indications from the medical records as to the rationale of the patient taking the steroid medications. The medical records were incomplete, and concerns over wound care, timing of the wound care, and delay in a surgical recovery procedure. And allegation number 4, billing concerns. The doctor billed for a chronic wound care, but the wound was only 3 weeks post-op and called chronic. Bills were submitted for 3, 4, 5, and 6 weeks post-op, which should have been in the global period and not billed. The bills were submitted for a level 4 visit, which should have been a level 3. The patient was billed a $15 fee for records, which, according to his chart, did not sanction a bill for transfer of record request. and information to be followed up by another physician. In addition, one of the most concerning allegations is that the patient was in the hospital. Both he and his infectious disease physician, Dr. Khan, requested from the hospital records of the Dr. Olson's culture that was taken on the patient in the office. The request came on February 24th, 2020, which was a Monday. On Thursday, February 27th, the records were finally faxed to the hospital at 3:58 p.m., which was not expeditious to the patient's care. There was a long delay for this vital information. My concerns for this case were substantiated for allegations 1, 2, and 3. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Polakoff. And Dr. Polakoff, with the additional information that you that was received, is there anything else that should be brought to our attention from that information?
That I do understand that the patient's insurance was canceled just a few days after the patient had surgery. But the patient was still in the global surgical fee. So bills should not have been produced, wound care should have been offered, and medical records should have been improved.
So, Dr. Polakoff, I do have a question in regards to the billing on the EOBs. Always, you know, we see that there was no payment on the wound care, and there are, you know, the codes that are on there that would describe the reasons for non-payment. I don't see that we have an explanation of, I believe the codes are CO45 and RR26. And did you see any indication of those descriptions to know, or the knowledge that because of non-payment that they were rebilled?
No, I did not. That's why I said the medical records were incomplete.
Yes.
Poor medical record keeping, but the doctor did charge a level 4. So the medical records do not substantiate the bills, nor do they provide care for an ongoing physician. And the ongoing physician in this case was Dr. Harrell, which did create a concern by the ongoing physician for lack of medical records.
Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilano, do you have any additional questions for Dr. Polakoff?
This is Dr. Foreman. The only question I have is, I know it took a week to get the medical records and they should have been expedited, but what Arizona's statutes are regarding sending notes over to the hospital?
I don't know if there are any specific statutes sending notes to the hospital, but I do know from the patient and the patient's girlfriend, who was with the patient at every single visit, that the patient was desperate to get the medical records to the hospital. The patient had to have emergency surgery. The infectious disease doctor also called trying to get the medical records. So I don't understand a 4-day delay during the week. On the weekend, I could understand a few days delay, but this was a Monday through a Thursday, so I don't understand this.
Dr. Polakoff and other members of the board, our statutes, it's 21 days with proper, application for, records to be released and forwarded. But when a patient's in the hospital with an infection, it would seem pertinent that obviously the records would have been expedited, especially something that was just it. And they asked for it by fax. Just all they wanted was records of the culture result. It wasn't, they were asking, because later on when the patient finally did, after his discharge from the hospital, went to medical records and the office ended up sending back the culture and micro and and I believe an op report and progress notes, but that was after, obviously after the patron was discharged. So, and there's, you know, evidence in the medical records that Dr. Kahn twice in his plan stated about getting those records, that culture results. So anyway, so if anybody else didn't have any questions for Dr. Polakoff, Dr. Polakoff, thank you for your complete reports as always.
You're welcome.
Now we have our complainants. I don't have a request to speak form from. Oh, okay. So I thought we always did the other. Okay. So we should go first. So while that's being signed, then we're going to, I will ask that Dr. Olson and his counsel, Mr. Whittakin, gentlemen, you can have a seat and. Oh, since he spoke before. Okay, I understand. Okay. All right. Have a seat. I'll wait for Bo to come back. So. Okay. All righty. So, thank you, gentlemen. Good morning. At this time, I will ask you, Dr. Olson, if you would please give a summary or synopsis of the your care of this patient, and then if your counsel wishes to make, if you want to make an opening statement, Mr. Whittakin, or if you feel comfortable, we'll just go ahead and move on to having Dr. Olson speak.
There we go.
John.
So I don't know if Dr. Polakoff had a chance to read Dr. Olson's July 2021 response. I think that addresses most of the issues that have been raised. The records in this case are voluminous, so I understand how perhaps some of those were overlooked in preparing the consultant's report. But it appears as though Dr. Polakoff relied, and I understand why, in large part on what the complainant and his girlfriend had to say. I've been doing this for over 35 years, doing medical cases, and whenever I get a complaint from a patient or a complaint from a plaintiff's lawyer, I look at it very carefully. I try and be objective. I assume the facts are accurate, and then, of course, I compare them to the contemporaneous medical records. I compare the complaint to the contemporaneous medical records, it's just not accurate. And surgery was on December 27. The patient had multiple follow-up visits. When there was concern about infection, on January 29th, Dr. Olson called in the prescription and saw the patient the next day. Yes, the patient's insurance had lapsed. If I understand correctly, it was because he was access, and then he was making more than the limit to qualify for access. That there's any basis to suggest that the patient was abandoned. It seems as though the focus was his attempts to get records, and Dr. Olson was under the understanding that he was still his patient. We do not have, that I'm aware of or could see, and I don't think Dr. Olson has found any faxed requests for records to get them sooner than they were obtained, but they were sent within a matter of days to the hospital. So on the billing issues, there are post-operative care, global billing, those are somewhat difficult CPM codes to deal with. Dr. Olson provided some of the information related to that. But at any rate, I think we've addressed, or he has addressed, all of the concerns in his July 21 report. And certainly any additional questions you have, me, I'd be happy to answer, and Dr. Olson is available to answer any other questions you have.
So, Dr. Olson, if you would just summarize your care of the patient, please.
Would you like me to start from the beginning?
Yes, sir. Yep. Yep.
The patient presented with a painful hardware in his ankle. Screws are very prominent, causing him discomfort. After discussing options, he opts for surgery to remove that hardware. Hardware was removed without any complications. Everything went well with the surgery. The post-op care was pretty standard. I saw him the following week. Her dressing changed the next week. The sutures were removed. At that time, there was no infection or no dehiscence. We continued to monitor the wound. The wound started to deteriorate. I saw him probably weekly or debridement of those wounds as they were, product, antibiotics were prescribed. I don't recall the patient begging for surgery at every visit. Towards the end of that, our encounters started to deteriorate enough that I felt that it was indicated for surgical debridement of that wound. We went ahead and did a preoperative visit on that day, and that's where that level four visit was done that Dr. Polakoff was talking about. Those level four visits can be more time-consuming with a pre-op consult. You go into a lot more detail. You sign surgical consents, and you can do a level four for that visit. Once we started trying to get authorization with the insurance, we found out that it was expired. At that point, we had to obviously cancel the surgery because he did not want to pay cash for the procedure. At that time, I started to find other ways to help the patient. I got a wound vac donated from KCI. I got wound grafts donated by MTF. And we continued to call the patient and try to help him. He was told multiple times that there was for his follow-up visits or for those visits afterwards, that I would be willing to do the procedure for free. That's about it. And then the patient disappeared. I didn't know he was admitted to the hospital until we started getting those information. He never asked to be discharged as a patient. I thought I was continuing to treat him. That's why I reached out multiple times to check on him to see how he's doing, because he was not following up and I was concerned about his wound. And then all the complaint came through, and then here we are now. I think I hit most of it. Yeah.
They may have additional questions.
That's what we'll do. We'll move to questions here now. So I'll go ahead and start. So did you know that when you did surgery on the patient that he had been on the 20 milligrams of prednisone?
I don't recall.
Because there was... there was nothing in the record that gave a diagnosis for it, or no mention any time. We didn't see any mention in the medical record about the patient being on the prednisone and why and how long he'd been on there.
He may not have disclosed that to us when he filled out his new patient paperwork. If it wasn't in the chart, it probably was never reported to me. I'd have to look in the chart and see if that's
there
the case.
Hang on a second here. Now, there's a lot of...
Yeah, because we just take that information that he gives us and puts that, chart itself. Mm-hmm. So if he doesn't write that he was taking prednisone, there's no way I would know that unless he told me.
Should be on the... I think it was on the initial intake form here, so let me go in.
Yes, it is on the initial intake form.
It is in there. So, okay, that answers that. Okay.
I would have known that, yes.
Yeah. Because certainly I think the issue of taking out sutures at day 13, I know we're all taught in school 10 to 14 days, but you've got a patient that's been on prednisone and then, you know, in lateral ankle surgery, that's one of the more common complications is wound dehiscence. There had already been previous surgery, and I realize it was like 5 years prior that the hardware was put in for the fibular fracture, but there's still those factors and components that can certainly affect affect the wound healing. Talking about debriding without anesthesia in the office, that he had profound sensory loss, but the records state that his sensation was intact. So again, that's what Dr. Polakoff was talking about. It was the documentation didn't make a lot of sense there.
Could you explain that for me, Dr. Campbell? Where does it say that he was insensate or he had no sensation?
Okay, hang on. Let me see. I have to go back through all my to get the page number that shows that.
Maybe it was in the plan where I just explained the debridement. Maybe that's what it is.
Did you not bring your chart with you, doctor?
Got it right here.
Okay. Like I said, it's kind of an interesting thought that here, a patient, you can have something that says they have intact sensation, but that you did a debridement without anesthesia because of extreme sensory loss. It's just, you know, again, it's like, you know, or the documentation, if it's not telling the true story here, it's confusing. And there was, you know, also too, there were notes about even after the hardware was taken out, it's still saying there were prominent screw heads. I'm like, so why isn't the, it's like, are you, it's just your notes were repopulating and you're not doing an exactly a separate note to ascertain to show that, you know, this was removed. You mean you did the surgery, but it's not. You're not showing in your documentation that it was done. And then as, you know, after the surgery and the wound started to dehisce, your dressing, I think you used like a betadine and gauze dressing, but, you know, that skin's under a lot of pressure. Again, with the prednisone, it just seems like, you know, yes, the wound vacs are great, but it just seems like, you know, at that time, if you went that 2-month span and did nothing more definitive, that you put the patient at risk for an osteo. And I mean, there are no, you know, we have the insurance issue and stuff, but the fact that, you know, there are, you know, other options, you could have sent them to a wound clinic or something where, you know, something more expeditious could have been done and maybe prevent the snowball that started to happen here.
Dr. Campbell,
yes.
A lot of us podiatrists have also been trained extensively in wound care.
I
think you're the same way. And you know, there are certain times that it is appropriate to send patients to wound care, but there are also appropriate times where you can treat that patient in your office. And I think we are very well trained to do that.
Because that would be one of my other questions. Yeah, is, you know, do you feel comfortable treating wounds and things like that, that it wasn't anything that you didn't think that you could have handled and that you would have referred to a wound clinic, or, you know, we were always taught, you know, if there's no change in a wound in 3 to 4 weeks, you better reevaluate and change your treatment protocol.
You're right, and I did feel comfortable. That's why there was no referral to wound care.
Yeah, but so too, and there, this is, what was your last day of service? You wrote, there were two letters that you wrote to the board. One was dated the 15th of December of the year 2000. It says your last date of service was February the 2nd. Then in a letter in response to Dr., you know, when Dr. Polakoff gave her report and you responded back, it was dated the 21st of July of this year. It said the last date of service was the 12th of February.
The last time I saw the patient, is that your question?
Yes,
Dr. Campbell?
Sir. Mm-hmm.
The last day that the patient came to an appointment was February 12th of 2020.
Okay. So, you know, are we assuming that this was a typo or here, you know, one time in the initial response you say the second and now the other letter says the 12th. So that was
I don't think I had an initial response, Dr. Campbell. The only response I did with the board was this response that I just sent on the 20, you know, this month or last month.
Well, we have a letter dated that you wrote to the board on 12/15 of 20.
I don't think I have that letter. I don't think I wrote that letter. I only did one response to the board.
And I think it may well be a typo to...
Well, that's what we're trying to ascertain, yeah.
The progress note is 212, and that's the pre-op appointment.
Another question. Between your initial office visit and the day you did the surgery to remove the painful hardware, was there a problem why that wasn't done sooner? Was your scheduling problem for your schedule, or was it the patient couldn't, you know, do surgery until that time?
You know, I don't know.
Okay.
I really don't know. It could be either patient's schedule or my schedule. It's that's not an emergency surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a concern.
Okay, I just wanted to know, you know, if there was, you know, other issues going on. It's just a question here. So you said you didn't know, you knew the patient was in the hospital, or did not know that the patient was in the hospital?
I did not know. The only message we got when we reached out to the patient was just saying he's going in a different direction. Not that I have record of telling us that he was.
And when you're talking about, again, back to the 99214, you did that exam in 2019. And at that time was not considered a component of that E&M code. Now it is. Beginning of this year in 2021, E&M codes have changed.
Correct.
Criteria, and it can now be used, but at that time it was not part of the criteria. And that's why I think, you know, there was why those changes occurred was because of time people do spend. So, but at that time that was not part of the thing. Do you listen to the heart and lungs and palpate the abdomen, or do you send a patient for outside pre-op evaluation?
Depends on the patient.
That says, Mr. Rhodes, do you have any questions for the doctor?
I was looking at things, and 13 days is a standard time for removal of the stitches?
Correct.
And I see also you offer a free wound back and skin grafts to the patient later on. Is that not correct?
Correct as well.
And I was looking at number three allegation. It would be redundancy to say every plate you took out, every screw you took out, every staple. And I feel that you said you removed the hardware. That explains everything with the x-rays. Is that not correct?
I think my exact words are right. The hardware was removed in total, which means...
Total, correct.
There was also fluoroscopy images done in the surgery, which also shows... That was in my response, that report from the operating room that shows that all the screws were.
And the x-rays show that.
Correct, yeah.
That's all.
Thank you. Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions?
Yes. Yeah, so what you're saying about the office is that you never got a response from, never got a fax from the hospital asking for the culture?
Yeah, correct. I have no record of that in my records.
Okay. And back to the sutures, did they look like they were ready to come out during that visit?
It's hard to remember. It's been a little while, but you typically, if I feel that the sutures aren't ready, I will leave them in for another week. That probably happens less often than I do take them out at around 2 weeks. Most of the time it's in my diabetics, my amputations, my TMAs, that sort of stuff. Those tend to stand a little bit longer. But yeah, it appeared like the wound was ready for the sutures.
Okay. That's all the questions I have. Thank you.
Dr. Ilano, sir.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Dr. Olson. This is Dr. Ilano.
Hello.
I got a question for you. During any time of the treatment of the patient, did you ever cancel or discharge the patient from your office?
No. No, the only thing that was canceled was the surgery. I think it was a financial thing. So we were trying to find another way to around that.
So you were trying to circumvent it and help the patient another way because of the insurance plan. That was all my question.
I'm sorry, I didn't get what you said. You're breaking up a little bit.
No, that was my question. That's my only question, if you discharged the patient or not.
No, I did not.
Okay. Anything else there, Dr. Ilano?
No, that's it.
Okay. I want to go back here a little bit and hit the timelines here. I took all the different notes from everybody and trying to make this so that we can see exactly what went where, because of course we all know we always get, you know, you've got he said, she said going on here, and I think Mr. Whittakin remarked about that. It's comparing things to try to see what really happened. You know, everybody has their recollection of what occurred, and you know, we have to determine if, you know, if somebody's, you know, but not being truthful here, or if something happened, or like I said, people have perceptions of what went on. So I just want to go back through this so that we're all seeing how this played out, because we have, obviously, we have to determine if there's been, you know, any violation of state statutes, what level of anything is going on, and how to adjudicate this case. So on 9/24 of 19, that was the initial visit that the patient had with Dr. Olson and the complaint of painful hardware. There were labs that were done on 12/7/19, and I had asked Dr. Olson about that time frame in there as to why the case wasn't scheduled earlier. And of course, that it wasn't an urgent case. The painful hardware wasn't anything that needed to be taken care of.
Dr. Campbell?
Quickly.
The lab work was given to him probably on that first visit, and that was his choice to get the blood work done. And so it was 100% on the patient on that.
Oh, okay. That's when the labs were done. Okay.
He chose to do the labs that day.
Okay. Thank you. So on then we moved to the 19th of December, which was when the preoperative visit was done and the consents were signed. Then on the 23rd of December, you ran a pharmacy history request on the patient. Do you do that for all your patients, doctor? Then the surgery was performed on December the 27th of 19, and that was done at Scottsdale Osborne. Honor Health. Still Scottsdale Osborne to me. And then we have your operative report is there. So your first post-operative visit was the 30th of December. And found out on the 31st of December that the insurance had expired.
I didn't know that at that time.
I know. I'm just, like I said, I took all this stuff and put it together so we can try to have a clear picture here of what transpired. Sutures were removed on the 9th of January, and at that time you noticed a slight gapping of the wound. And I believe it was, I don't know if it was central or distal. Anyway, then you performed the full thickness debridement because there was drainage on January the 23rd of 20. We have then on the 30th of January more drainage, and cultures were taken, and it says here Bactrim was written. Then we have the micro report from Baco Labs that was on 2-2 of 20 that noticed the Pseudomonas, the very scant growth. And again, this is where I asked, was that the last visit? But it's now been indicated that that last visit was the 12th. Then it looks like your colleague in the office, I saw the patient on the 5th of February, noted pain and drainage, and treated the patient with Samtel. Then we have on the 12th of February, no change in the wound. And apparently what the record states, as your colleague indicated, that surgery was only for if there was painful deformities, but I guess it looks like there was some discussion about the possibility of surgery, maybe even a wound back at that time. Then it notes on that on the 13th of February that you tried to contact the patient regarding their insurance, and that you would be trying to be able to get the charity HVAC from KCI and the wound, the skin graft, or whatever biologic you were going to get. Then we say here that the patient called on the 18th of February saying they were having pain and made an appointment. The office made an appointment for the 19th at 11, but the patient canceled the appointment. Okay. Then, also at that time, you signed the form to apply for the charity back. And then the complainant presented a recording that was received from your office indicating he had the appointment on the 19th at 11:03 in the morning. And the patient had already, I don't, you know, if that was already set and it overran, but that the patient, actually the recording said the patient was to have an appointment on the 20th instead of the 19th. So I don't know what happened, you know, if that was not an office error, or if this was, you know, another appointment that was made that the patient didn't know about, that the patient didn't make. So, you know, this was part of our questions. Then on the 19th of February, that's the initial visit that the complainant had with Dr. Harrell, who had actually done the ORIF for the fibular fracture years prior. Then patient was admitted on the 24th, and the wound was debrided and the wound vac was applied. The patient called you from the hospital on the 25th wanting to get the result from the culture, and that was, again, like I said, noted twice in the chart by Dr. Kahn, the infectious disease specialist. Patient was discharged from the 26th, and appears that the patient didn't say that he was in the hospital. You didn't ask, nobody asked, you know, what was going on there. So the patient was discharged on the 26th, and it says here on the 26th that your office called to offer to see him, telling me about the free treatment. The patient said he'd gone a different route. So then we have on the 27th, patient went back to Banner Desert to sign a release to have his records sent. And this was after discharge, and your office responded in fax that same day at nearly 4 in the afternoon and sent back you know, the lab results, medical record, progress notes, etc. Then it's there's an indication from you that on the 3rd of March the patient was called, that the medical records were left or were ready, left a message, and then the patient wanted records on the 9th wanted records from Banner and the other records faxed to him, and he was told it wasn't an option. So was the patient, he wanted to make sure that he, that if you were sent records from Banner and plus your records is what I'm assuming, to, he wanted all his medical records. Is that what you recall?
A lot of times those phone calls come into the staff. They don't come directly to me.
Okay, so they don't talk to you about any of that?
No, they write the addendum in the chart and have the same information.
And so then the patient paid $15 for the medical record copies on the 10th of March, and that at that those records were not in indication of continuity of care, those were just for the patient's personal file? Because the question here is, statutorily, you can charge a patient for their own copy, for their own personal use, but you cannot charge them to send records to the hospital or other physician.
You're correct. The records had already been sent to the hospital on February 27th.
Okay, so that's what just... Everybody's on the same page here. And then we have on the 23rd of April that there was a phone message that was received that indicated that the patient had an appointment with Dr. Olson on 4:30. So what I don't understand is how if the patient had, you know, was that, when was that appointment made? Obviously, if the patient had left your practice on their, from their own choice was to you know, so why is there that appointment?
I just don't put patients on my schedule. It's very full. I don't put fake patients on my schedule. The only way that would be on there is if someone asked for that appointment. Show up.
Right, but the patient hadn't tells us that they had not scheduled that appointment. So that's what we're just trying to ascertain. Where did this, you know, where did this? Because that was some of the part of the. The issue was that appointments were made for the person that the person didn't make. So I'm just, that's why I'm asking these questions.
So, make any sense to me either.
Right. That's what's a little confusing here, so.
The only way a patient's on the schedule is on the call.
Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilano, do you have any other questions? Hello? Apparently not. Or are they still on the line? I'll make sure we don't lose them.
Dr. Foreman, Dr. Ilano?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I just got a text here. Couldn't hear. Dr. Polakoff said she couldn't hear anything and told everybody to hang up and redial in. So I think things just died. We had this problem before. After we had rain the last time this happened. Yeah, so she said she could, that there was nothing that was being heard from our end.
Okay. Welcome to Lumen Conferencing. Please enter your passcode followed by the pound or hash key, and I'll connect you. Thank you. Your passcode is confirmed. When you hear the tone, you will be the fourth person to join the meeting.
Again, to the board administrator.
Okay. Thanks, Dr. Polakoff. Yeah.
Guys, we're back on.
So I don't know where things went off, but did you hear any of the conversation between myself and Dr. Olson?
I didn't. Dr. Ulano.
Dr. Foreman, did you hear anything, sir?
No, I think you were recapping the dates.
Yes, that's what I was doing. Yeah, so I just was doing that to try to make sure we were all, you know, on the same page as flow of the chronological order of this. And you know,
Dr.
some...
Dr. Campbell?
Yes, ma'am.
Dr. Campbell, the last thing that we heard was you mentioned Dr. Harrell took over care, and that was right then it cut off.
Okay. Okay, so that was back to Dr. Harrell's first visit was on the 19th of February. The surgery was on the 24th. The patient was discharged from the hospital on the 26th. But while he was there in the hospital on the 25th, he called Dr. Olson's office trying to get the lab work on the culture so that Dr. Kahn, the infectious disease specialist, would have that information and be able to, you know, do his plan of care. The doctor did not know that the patient was in the hospital. Like I say, he was discharged on the 26th. Dr. Olson's office called to offer to see him and that he had, you know, attained the wound vac and the biologic for the dressing, wound dressing. Then the patient went back to the hospital on the 27th. Signed a release, and because they didn't have the information, they said they never got the information from Dr. Olson's office. Dr. Olson's office responded in kind with the facts, sending all the information. But of course, the patient had already been discharged. Then there were on the 3rd, Dr. Olson's office of March called to tell him that the medical records were ready. On the 9th, the records from requested records from Banner, as well as I believe all of Dr. Olson's records regarding his care. He paid for that on the 10th of March. And then I was discussing the fact that there was a phone message that the patient received that was presented in the packet on the 23rd, telling him there was an appointment on the 30th of April. And Dr. opined that his office wouldn't make an appointment for somebody because he has a busy schedule. The only way that appointment would have been made was if someone had called and made it. But this is a little, you know, he said, she said here. It's because the complainant is saying they didn't make an appointment. And then why would a patient leave a practice and make an appointment when they're being cared for by another physician? So, like I said, this is part of this conundrum of what really happened, what didn't happen. So does that bring you up to speed on where we were?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Campbell.
Okay, so nobody has any other questions, correct? Okay, so we have the complainant here. So I will ask doctor and his counsel to step back from the table and have our complainant, B.M., he can come up to the front. He was here at the initial review and gave us his summary. So he is here today to, if anyone has any additional questions for him, that this is the time to ask. And so let me find my list here, because I do have a few questions for him. Good morning. Thank you for your attendance. When did you first find out that you no longer had health insurance?
I found out a day before the revision surgery was to be performed.
Okay. So you had nothing from Access prior to that?
I had no idea. Dr. Olson's scheduler called me and canceled the surgery because it was had been canceled. Okay. Or I was booted off the insurance.
So with the Access, do you have to do a monthly with them showing what your income is or any generating kind of documents like that?
No. Okay.
So had you been on Access for a while?
I had been, yeah.
Yeah, because in the medical records from the hospital, that I know the case manager was working really hard to help you with the access application?
Yes. Yeah, we're trying to reapply.
Yeah, we're trying to help you out there. So, okay. Okay. And I had asked the doctor about, you know, the time between your initial visit and when you had the surgery. As my question was there something else that, you know, he indicated, of course, this was not an urgent surgery. So you were okay with that time of before you were going to have
the... talking about the...
When the hardware was removed.
I wanted it done as soon as possible, for sure. It was very painful. But the second surgery, I was begging for that. And I have some statements I'd like to make.
Oh, certainly. Could you allow me, though, to see if my colleagues have questions? And then, gentlemen, do you have any questions for our complainant before he gives some more comments? Or is everybody there?
Yeah, okay. I have a question. When you asked for the records from Dr. Olson, did you expressly ask for the culture results? It was important because you were seeing another doctor.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
You know, when you asked for the medical records from Dr. Olson, mm-hmm. and you were seeing another doctor, the infectious disease doctor needed the results for the culture results.
Yes.
Did you express to Dr. Olson that it was very important to have those culture results sent over, ASAP, or was it just, I just need my records?
It was me begging for the records. I was stuck in the hospital, and I was calling, begging him for those records. They didn't know how they needed a plan of attack. It was urgent. I left him voicemails, and I called over and over again. The hospital was as well. It was a huge sense of urgency. I was stuck in the hospital for a whole week because they didn't want to release me without those records. And I just incurred debt after debt after debt just sitting there waiting for these records. So yes, to answer your question, it was a sense of ultimate urgency as soon as possible.
So you said you were in the hospital a week. But the records say you were discharged, you came in on the 24th, but were discharged on the 26th. Were you there before the 24th of February?
I was in there for 6 days. Yeah, I was in there for 6 days.
I'm sorry, Dr. Yolano and Foreman, I didn't mean to interrupt, but that just popped into my head, so... Please proceed.
No.
If you have anything.
No worries. I want to get to the bottom of this. So, as I understand it, Banner had the records on the 27th that Dr. Olson gave him?
It was my understanding that he didn't, that we didn't, we never got the records. I was in pursuit of the records, and so was the hospital. And I guess they were delivered eventually, but it took them 4 or 5 days to do it.
Okay. Because according to the records of Banner, it was there the 27th.
Yeah, that's correct, Dr. Yolano. That's when the records were sent, February 27th.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Did at any point did Dr. Olson discharge you from his office?
You know, there's some discrepancies here. He told me, and I got a sworn affidavit from my witness, that by no means would there be a surgery without insurance. A cash price was never mentioned ever, and I. That'd be a question for him. He never gave me an official discharge. He tells a very different story, but he ghosted me. He disappeared on me. He abandoned me. I did not withdraw on my own accord. I left voicemail after voicemail, talked to his staff, left messages with his staff. He would not return the calls. I don't understand where his story is coming from.
You wanted to make a few other comments.
If you don't mind, I just wanted to respond to some of the stuff he said. I apologize.
Take your time.
I was forced to seek help elsewhere. He ignored me and my pleas for help. My bone was exposed. Every doctor that saw this was appalled. He not made one false appointment. He made two false appointments, and I submit evidence for that. I submit a voice recording and also a transcription off my iPhone. I don't know why he did that, and I don't know why he's not telling the truth about it. I don't know if he was trying to make it look like I abandoned the care or what the reasoning was, but I did not make those appointments. I was scared to death of him because of the negligence. I also wanted to mention that he says he offered skin grafts and a wound vac. That wasn't true. There was no communication at all, so how could he have told me that he got me this stuff? And besides the fact this wound was black and my leg was dying, my bone was exposed, what's good is a wound vac putting it on there with the infection so close to my bone? I needed revision surgery. He never once offered anything for free other than gauze to dry pack it. I also want to mention that when the sutures were removed, it was gaping. It was not anywhere near closed up. And I think that's about it. There's no mention of free care. I would have taken it. I would have absolutely taken it. I was desperate. My leg was dying.
I see that Dr. Harrell then was able to get you the wound back and the care, and that you came to his office for the changing and was without charge from Dr. Harrell. So,
yeah.
I think we're yes, ma'am, sir. Okay, because there was one part that said they were discharged on the 26th. And that, thank you, because that's an important part of this. So we've heard a lot of stuff, and we're trying to move this. I think there is just, there's so much more here, and I am going to make a motion to move this to an informal interview. And I will give, and based on possible violations, these are possible, and this is under Professional Behavior 32-854.01. Number 21 is committing any conduct or practice that is or might be harmful or dangerous to the health of the patient. And that would be the issues of abandonment, failure to meet standard of care. Post-operative x-rays was also in that, but we didn't even delve into that. That can come at the informal. Number 11, failing or refusing to maintain adequate records on a patient for at least 7 years, or refusing to make records available to a physician or other podiatrist within 21 days. But again, this was from mainly for the hospital situation of needing record for continuity of care. And number 25, obtaining a fee by fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation, and that is in regards to billing for chronic wounds during a global time period. And number 26, charging a fee for services not rendered. That would be in association with the 99214 that was billed on 9/24/19. Again, these are only allegations, and that's, we have to have these stated before we proceed to an informal interview, and that does not mean that they're all violated. This is just the procedure. So I have made my motion. Do I have a second? Do I have a second on the motion, please?
Second it.
Thank you. Any discussion? Any discussion? Seeing none, hearing none. Let's take a roll call vote. Dr. Foreman?
Aye.
Dr. Yolano?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell? Aye. Mr. Rhodes?
Aye.
Motion passes. Dr. Olson, our complainant, Mr. Whittakin, you will receive information regarding the informal interview from Seamus and from Bo. So thank you, everybody, for participating. Appreciate your time, and we will...
Ask for something here. Have the file of materials that Dr. Foreman
Can you speak up to the mic, please?
I'm sorry.
Dr. Yolano, you just asked for the investigative report.
All righty. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Ready to move on here. I'm going to move to C, which is the compliance update, before we do the license renewal issues. For Dr. Farrell, had to close his practice due to health reasons. And so he has that ongoing order on chart audit, which is case number 18-08-C. Dr. Polakoff has been doing those reviews on any kind of nerve decompression surgery that Dr. Farrell has performed, and he has not done any for months on end. So because of the fact that he is closing his practice due to health reasons, typically the way this is handled is that we discharge him from the order with the caveat that if at any time he wants to return to private practice, which in this situation probably will not occur, but that chart review will go back into effect. So does anyone have any questions on that from Seamus or anybody about that problem, the issue? Okay, so since nobody seems to have a question on that, I'm going to make a motion that due to health concerns for Dr. Farrell, he is closing his office. And motion is to dispose of the matter of the chart review at this time for case 18-08-C. And at any time the doctor chooses to return to private practice, the chart review will be reinstated.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thank you. All right. So we'll go back here now to, we have on B, the renewal applications. We have some issues here with these board renewal applications. One is for Dr. Daniel Bangard. On his renewal application, he did note that he has another malpractice case that has been filed, that was filed on 10/29/2020. He also has another malpractice case that we already know about that is part of a complaint number 20-18-C, that when we were in the process of reviewing the complaint, that we found out that there was that malpractice case filed. So we already have a board complaint associated with that, so we don't have to open a separate complaint on it because it already has in a complaint. Correct, Seamus?
The previous memo.
Right.
Yeah, so you would need to open one for the new one.
Right, exactly. But I'm just, you know, explaining. Okay, so we've got the new case, which is that was filed on 10/29/20, which is CV 2020-013756. So as we typically do, there were no other issues with, you know, his application was statutorily complete. So does anybody have any questions there?
Yes. Do we have to open up one on his son?
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Okay.
That's on the net. That's next. So I'll make a motion then to accept Daniel Bangard's application, his license renewal application, noting that he did note, as he should, this new malpractice event on his application. So we'll accept his application for licensure. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, great. Any any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. So with accepting, then the next motion will be for Dr. Daniel Bangard, that will open make a motion to open a board complaint in regards to this malpractice suit that was disclosed on the renewal application, and to stay the complaint until the court decisions have been made.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Opposed? So moved. Okay. Now we'll move on to Keith Bangard. Now, Keith Bangard made his application, his renewal application was received on 6/29/21. So a little chronological here. Heather was no longer our executive director. Her last day was the 25th. Of course, you know, Margaret stepped in and helped. And Margaret became ill and could not participate, you know, in our interviews for our new ED and et cetera, et cetera. And she was trying to keep up with renewals, et cetera, et cetera. And then Bo started on the 26th of July. So somewhere, I think it was a mistake that it got missed. But Dr. Keith Bangard did note on his renewal application the two cases, the one that we have currently a complaint for his father on, which is the 12/18/2020. He also noted the new case, which he is more the primary care provider, which was the date of 10/29/20. So he was we have both of those, so we need to open up two separate board complaints on Dr. Keith Bangard for those. Does anybody have any questions about that, or well, no questions? Okay, so we'll do these each separately, gentlemen. So I will make a motion to open a board complaint from Dr. Keith Bangard regarding on his renewal application for this year, a malpractice case number CV 2020-013756, which was filed on 10/29/20.
Second.
Thank you. Seconded. Mr. Rhodes. Any discussion?
And to stay it, correct?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. And that we will stay the complaint until court has adjudicated the case.
Pending adjudication.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, everyone. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. All right. And then I will make a motion to open a board complaint for Dr. Keith Bangard regarding
Case number CV2020-016776, filed on 12/18/20, and staying the complaint until the court case has been adjudicated.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Rhodes. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Great. Okay, so we'll go back then to our four, to the review of the minutes. And that we, there's some, this obviously, you know, Margaret, this is what Margaret was able to create. And we all know sometimes it's, you know, she was not having difficulty, was not feeling great and everything, and listening to those recordings. So there's several
on here. And I apologize, Dr. Campbell, board members, I'll fall on my sword here. The July 2nd, 2021 open session minutes were, I actually drafted those.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
I think, you know.
And they look a little different than normal just because it was just going in and out of executive session.
Right. And find those here because I did not, hang on a second. When I did not see any issues with your minutes that you did for that day on the 2nd of July. Did anyone have any issues with those minutes?
No.
Okay. So hearing none, I will make a motion to accept minutes as written for the open session of 7/2/2021.
Seconded.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Okay, then let's move on to the July 14th, 2021. And it's like Seamus said, you know, Margaret's setup is a little different than what we're used to seeing, but that's okay. Should I go through each one of these, or do you want me to, you know?
I think that what we can do is
work between us and get them updated and then present them back again at the next meeting.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
Yeah, because in issue of time.
Yeah, so just take
morning.
No action on these meetings,
yeah.
On these minutes.
And we may, we always have the recording we can go back and then listen to, because there's a lot of stuff on here that needs to be added and corrected, and I just think it would be more expeditious if we do it that way and then present it back next month for vote. Does it sound okay for everybody?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. So we'll just carry on with that. So next is the executive director's report. You're up, Bo.
First time.
Hi, everybody. How's everybody doing? Okay, so director report, I fielded 76 calls, I returned 46 calls. We do have a update on the annual budget submission. I got a meeting next week to try to get that figured out and get you guys something back. We do have five new complaints that needed to be added to the complaint log. We do plan to start moving into Salesforce. We have 64 renewals that I processed and sent out, and this was all done using the new Salesforce via email, and then just e-card sent through the email as well. And then we have 105 renewed, and this was just a report done off Salesforce really quickly. So that leaves quite a bit on paper applications that probably still need to be transferred over and submitted to Salesforce. And that's kind of it. That's all.
Okay, does anyone, summary of current events? And then next we'll move to call to the public, and at this point we have no public out there, so that is completed. The next is discussion of possible action items for future agendas, and I do have something that we need to start moving on in the progression of
things here. We've got, you know, our legislation that was passed will become, I want to make sure I got the right date that it becomes effective. I want to say it's September 1st. Is that correct? I believe that's correct. Because it's usually, because it's after 60 days after close of session.
So 90 days.
Okay.
It'd be September 29th.
September 29th. Okay. So that gives us opportunity then. You know, we had started our discussion with the state association, you know, in regards it's time to work on the definition of the podiatric medical assistant because that's part of the statutory changes and their education. And we'd had the discussion with Dr. Boyd Andrews and other members of the state association in the, using the course that's given by the American Podiatric Medical Assistance Association as far as, you know, training with x-rays and being certified in x-rays, since that's been the issue with, you know, when everything went south with the agencies that used to give the test for podiatric medical assistants to be certified in taking x-rays, et cetera, we all know the history here. So we need to start working on that, getting that definition and that education lined up so that that can go into rules. So I would propose is that we invite Dr. Boyd and I think Dr. Discount, Mary Peters is now the past president because Boyd's, so I don't know who are any, you know, anybody that's on this executive board of the state association, plus Mr. Abadi, the lobbyist for the association. He was president in the past. I'm sure he'd want to be included. So that, because then we have to, we have to get what's called an exemption. So that's what we'll have to, so be thinking about, you know, Heather, you should still have the information, you know, different definitions that Heather had presented to us when we were in process of doing the legislation, that from like the medical association and the DOs and chiropractors, I think, too, where there were samples of definition. And, you know, we may even have several meetings ago, I'll have to go back through things where we discussed some of those definitions so that we would know what we were, you know, how we wanted to proceed. And I know Heather, we had gone through and struck things from rule so that we, because there was, for everything you add, you have to remove so many rules. So,
yeah. So for every one, you have to remove three.
Right. So, and like I said, Heather had already gone through that. And I think rules is coming up soon, isn't it? I have to.
Not sure.
We may have to pick Heather's brain again to help me remember all this so that so we're all on the same page about this stuff. So that's what, you know, it'd be nice if we could, you know, get him here next month because it is September. It'll just, you know, depend on their schedules and ours, but so that we're able to move forward with this and get the situation with the x-rays working better. And I don't know how long it'll take us to get an exemption. So, you know, government works slow. So, anyway, anybody have any other things they'd like to see on future meetings? And
I just like to say I turned into Heather a while back. I told her December before, and this will be my last meeting. I've appreciated working with everyone, and it's been an honor to serve on the board. So a long 12 years, and just want to tell you thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rhodes. We've appreciated your input and your friendship, too. We've appreciated your input and your friendship.
I can't hardly hear anymore either.
Oh, anyway, so our next board meeting is September the 8th, 2021, in this same boardroom. So at 9:56 a.m., I will make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Opposed? So moved. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Rhodes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Rhodes.
Appreciate everything.
Thank you. Recorder.
Frankie wasn't here to cry about no more jerky.
I know. I went out shooting last,